and the rain to be here. So, whoopsie, that shouldn't have been that. Okay, welcome. So this morning, I was asked to be the first in this series on, by the way, have I got this going right? I think so. Good. I was asked to be the first in this series on six characters from the Old Testament demonstrating their faith, and I decided to take on one that you might not be able to quickly understand where the faith came from. But I've called it the God of the Second Chance, because Israel began to do evil in God's sight. This was an ongoing thing with Israel. They were continually doing wrong in God's sight. So the Lord handed them over to the Philistines, as we saw in the children's program there, which was very helpful for me because it means I can skip certain readings. And so for 40 years they were oppressed by the Philistines. And they began to cry out to God, as you do when you're in trouble. I just wondered why it took 40 years. But anyway, it took them 40 years that they were crying out to God, and the Lord heard their cries. Isn't that wonderful? The Lord hears our cries. And he began to rescue Israel from the Philistines. Now, I want you to understand that we are dealing with a genre or a type of literature here called narrative. It is story. When I first heard that, and many other students heard that story, we thought, oh, no, it can't be story, it's true. No, story is narrative. It's just telling the story. And so it's narrative, and for some reason, the narrator here takes four chapters from 13 to 16 to tell the story of Samson. He is the last of 12 judges of Israel. And in fact, his story is larger than any of the other 11 judges. And so we see, no, good. I've just got to find which one. Now, here's a statement. Any nation can be the agent of God's judgment. In the case of Sodom and Gomorrah, God delivered his judgment unmediated. That is why the narrative, in other words, God took the judgment upon himself when he poured down fire and brimstone upon them. That is why the narrative acquires such proverbial force as the symbol of the naked wrath of God, which reaches its biblical climax, of course, in the book of Revelation. We see the same kind of thing. However, in the more normal course of history, God uses one nation or another as the instrument of his sovereign justice. The classic first instance of this in the Bible is the way the conquest of the Canaanites by the tribes of Israel is repeatedly interpreted as the outworking of Yahweh's judgment on a society's whose iniquity was full, a condition they had not reached when God predicted it to Abraham in Genesis 15:6. So we read all about this in our children's thing, so we can continue on. The son that is given to Manoah's wife and to Manoah and his wife is to be a Nazarite. That meant someone dedicated or consecrated. According to Numbers 6:1-12, a Nazarite vow was voluntary, taken for a limited time, but Samson's was lifelong. It had three restrictions. I'm not a Nazarite. They were to abstain totally from fermented drink, and they could not eat grapes or raisins. just in case they had fermented. They could not have their hair cut. I tried that with my mother, it didn't work. And they could not come near a corpse. Violation of these plays an important part in Samson's life, though the second restriction is particularly emphasized. It is important to remember, that didn't move. It's important to remember this was God's doing. God was going to rescue Israel. He would do it in spite of how Samson performed. We don't always understand how or why God works in the way he does. Hands up who agrees. Yes, I've almost got 100%. Faith is about trusting God. Sometimes Bible stories are embarrassing, nasty, or shocking. We may be tempted to explain them away or to show why it was not really as bad as it seemed. Don't do that. God tells it as it really is in this world. People are sinners and can do things that are desperately wicked and depraved, as you will know in today's world today. The marvel of the Bible is that God continues to work with and through even fallen, sinful people. And in the end, God accomplishes his purpose in spite of all the problems we caused. When the son was born, they named him Samson, and the Lord blessed him as he grew up. And the Spirit of the Lord began to stir in him. I want you to listen to this in contrast to the hair story. Keep that in mind. Keep hair and keep the Spirit of the Lord as two separate thoughts. Okay? Just keep them if you can. I can't do two or three things at once, but just keep that in mind. The Lord blessed him. The Spirit of the Lord began to stir in him. It is important that we understand that all of this is God's means to the end of rescuing Israel. It's not about Samson, but Samson makes it about himself. I find this one of the most interesting parts of the whole Samson story, actually, because we see in the world today those whom God has given great talent and great gifts and great blessing, and they make it all about themselves. It's as if they are talented, it's as if they are gifted, it's as if they are blessed of themselves, whereas it is God's doing. We should learn that when the Bible tells us, without him I can do nothing. But Samson didn't understand that. He had this enormous strength. But Samson very quickly goes off the rails. In Judges 14, 1 to 3, he finds a Philistine woman that caught his eye. That seems to be a problem in our world today too, isn't it? A beautiful woman catches your eye. He wants to marry her. Well, that's good. That's at least one good thing. He wants to marry her. His parents object. He told his father, "Get her for me. She looks good to me." His father and mother didn't realize the Lord was at work in this, creating an opportunity to work against the Philistines who ruled over Israel at that time. Please, please explain to me the contradiction in all this, the dichotomy. Samson's doing the wrong thing. His parents don't want him to marry a Philistine woman. They want him to marry a good Israeli woman, good Israelite. But the Lord is in this. Whoopsie, we went one too far then. So in chapter 14, we're still in chapter 14. Now, one of the things we need to understand about the story of Samson is sometimes we just get this version of Samson and Delilah. And when the narrator has gone to the problem of spending four chapters telling us the whole story, we need to know the whole story, because the whole story culminates in God's sovereign will coming to pass. And if we only pick out little bits, we lose the whole context of what the story is about. So one day, a lion attacks Samson. The Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon him in verse 5 of Judges. He later finds the carcass of the lion, scooped honey into his hands and ate it along the way. He also gave some to his mother and father, and they ate it. But he didn't tell them he had taken the honey from the carcass of the lion. Why didn't he tell them? Because he'd just broken one of the rules of being a Nazarite, that he's not to touch a dead body. So he's already broken the first rule: don't touch a dead body. I am sure as he was growing up, and his mother and father knew why he'd been called as a Nazarite, that they would have told him time and again, don't do this, don't do that. No, you can't cut your hair. No, you cannot do this. So what do we do as kids? We don't tell mum and dad. He's broken the vow of a Nazarite. Now, we come to we're still in chapter 14. His father throws a party because the wedding's been arranged. And so his final arrangements, the father gets 30 guys together to throw a party, as you do. But it was called a feast. And a feast was probably a drunken time. It's implied in that word feast that there would have been alcohol there, and Samson would have taken part of that, and he's just broken another part of the vow of a Nazarite. It is at this point that Samson begins to play with fire. Now, what we have to understand here is the progression that brings about Samson's downfall. Remember, it's all about himself. He loves the attention. He loves to be the center of attention. So there he is with 30 other guys, and he tells a riddle. And the young men, they can't figure it out, so they prevail upon his wife to reveal the answer. Now, this is the slippery slide. Samson was playing a game, but it would eventually lead to his downfall. It was just a game to Samson. But look at the consequences. The game ends with the Spirit of the Lord coming powerfully upon him. In the process, he kills 30 men and loses his wife. Playing games has its consequences. Then he decides, we get to chapter 15, then he decides he will go and get his wife back. But she's been given in marriage to the best man. The father has concluded that he's divorced her. So he offers a younger daughter instead. This is all where we get into real cultural stuff here. He had paid the bride price, but the father had given her to someone else. So the father says, well, you know, the younger daughter, she's beautiful, you can have her. We don't understand the thing, it's not part of our culture. Samson decides to take revenge. See how all this is about Samson? God has got a plan, and Samson's got his own ideas. He burns their grain harvest, their vineyards and olive groves in a very novel way. He finds 300 foxes. In fact, they suggest that maybe they were not foxes, because there was another animal like a fox that was more prevalent in that area. But anyway, it doesn't matter. He ties their tails together, sets them on fire, and sends them through. And he's taking revenge. But the result is that his father-in-law and former wife are burned to death by the inhabitants in their revenge. I think that's why God says to us, you know, let God be the judge. Let God take revenge. You know, you be forgiving and let God be the judge. Then the Philistines attack Judah. So the men of Judah decide, we've got to get rid of this Samson. He's too much trouble. So they're going to hand him over to the Philistines. So Samson said, well, look, tie me up like this, but don't kill me. Give me the Philistines. The Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon Samson, and he kills 1,000 men with the jawbone of an ass and boasts about it. He writes a little ditty about it. A little song, a little poem, boasting about it. Read it in chapter 15 there. See, it's all about Samson. Samson is now thirsty. It would be thirsty work with just a jawbone. You get out there and kill 1,000 men. And let's not try and say, oh, this is just figurative, or this is not true. This happened. But now he's thirsty and he cries out to the Lord. In fact, he says, you know, are you going to let me die because, you know, this has been hard work? So God calls water to gush out of a hollow in the ground. Samson is revived as he drinks. What does this tell us about God? Come on. What does this tell us about God?
Caring.
Provider. Yes. One I thought of, which I've just forgotten. It'll come back. Patient. We have a patient God that doesn't always hit us on the head when we do wrong. He waits for our repentance. And chapter 15 ends by stating, Samson judged Israel for 20 years in the period when the Philistines dominated the land. Now it gets worse. He then goes and spends the night with a prostitute. Sorry, that's the translation. And the Philistines see this as an opportunity to kill him. But at midnight, he gets up, he picks up the doors to the city. Now, these doors, they suggest weighed at least 200 kilograms. That would be an Olympic record, I reckon. They consisted of doors wide enough for a chariot to go through, and then huge posts to keep them in the ground so they couldn't be knocked down. And he just goes, and it didn't say he took the gates, it said he took the posts as well, hoists them up, and then it says carried them some distance. Now he actually ends up 40 kilometres away at Hebron from Gaza. But some suggest maybe he took them to the top of the hill overlooking the city and left them there and walked the rest. So he possibly deposited the gates at the top of a hill overlooking Gaza. It doesn't really tell you. What we do know, it was an amazing feat of strength. Did his hair do this? That's the question. Sometime later, so he's lost his first wife because he took revenge. He then goes with a prostitute. Then he falls, sometimes later, he falls in love with Delilah. Now notice it's kind of progressing. It's progressing closer to the truth. She lived near Samson's hometown, probably a Philistine, but it doesn't say. She is offered, listen to this, she is offered from each of the five rulers of the Philistines 1,100 shekels of silver, in other words, 5,500 shekels, equivalent to 550 years' wages in the current wages at that time. No wonder she was willing to betray him. What an enormous amount of a bribe to give the woman to find out the secret to Samson. So she starts to get out of Samson the secret of his strength. And notice he plays games again. He plays games. He tells her something. Notice it takes a while for him to get to the hair. He starts by saying, oh, if you were to tie me up, da-da-da. And so she did that, and when she'd wake him outside, the Philistines are here, he'd just break them up. And so he did that little trick a couple of times with different stories about how. Then he gets closer to the hair. And says, if you were to plait my hair or put my hair into seven and put them in a loom, so on. See, he's getting closer and closer to being able to of eventually telling that what it was. And that's what playing with fire does. When we play with fire, when we play fast and loose with the truth, eventually it traps us because we go one step too far. And I read some of the stories of those who have fallen into sin. Great leaders who have fallen into sin, and you realize when you hear the story that they played fast and loose with the truth. And it only takes this one step and then this step and then the next step, and each time you're going closer until you fall. And then the damage is catastrophic. Now, I'm not going to make any comment about her nagging because that would not be fair. But it's here that Samson's downfall be. He has toyed with her where his strength comes from, and each secret he shares moves closer and closer to the fact that his hair has never been cut. It is cut, and Samson thinks it'll all be the same, I'll just do it. But here is the kicker. He didn't realize the Lord had left him. See, what are we getting out of this story? In many ways, the hair was just a ruse. The hair was important because that was the vow of a Nazarite. But the important thing to get out of the story of, of Samson is that it was God's spirit that would come upon him. It was God working. And when God left him, he was powerless. So we get to chapter 16. And he's been captured. They put his eyes out. They put him to work, as we read, grinding grain. And then they put on this big feast. Now it says there were 3,000 people. 3,000 people that I think must have been spectators to the feast, because they were sitting up in the bleachers. And they bring out Samson for amusement. But Samson, maybe he's had a lot of time to reflect. Maybe going round and round and round in circles grinding cores has caused him to reflect and think back to all the times he felt the power of God come upon him, and that was the secret to his great strength. So he asked the young servant leading him to place his hands against the pillars. You see, he's about to bring the house down. That's a great thing to do at the end of the show, isn't it? Bring the house down. Here is the man who was used to doing everything in his own strength. Here was the man that was used to doing everything to satisfy his own revenge, his own sense of that which was wronged against him. Now he's needing someone to guide him. Then Samson prayed to the Lord. This is the conversion of Samson to the man of faith. This is where Samson's faith suddenly springs into life. It's no longer the Samson wanting revenge, the Samson wanting pleasure, the Samson wanting to do things his own way. This is the Samson of faith. He prays to the Lord, Sovereign Lord. Very important statement, that Sovereign Lord. That is an acknowledgement by Samson that God and God alone is his helper. Sovereign Lord, remember me again. He must have been thinking about the times when the Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon him, when the Lord blessed him. And now he's had a long time of reflection. And he says, Sovereign Lord, remember me again. Oh God, please strengthen me just one more time. He's still thinking of revenge, you know, but in a different sense. He prayed, let me die with the Philistines. Now it's Samson self-sacrificing, giving his life. And the temple crashed down on the Philistine rulers and all the people. So he killed more people when he died than he had during his entire lifetime. Samson had finally realized his strength came from the Lord. I'm sorry, I didn't do that one. God has called us all to a life of faith. Some of us are called to a specific ministry. In Samson's case, God wanted to deal with the Philistines. We must realize that it is not our strength that counts. We have been given the Holy Spirit to help us fulfill that to which we have been called. Without Him, we can do nothing. I will send the Comforter and He will do these things for me through you. Some have forgotten this principle and used the gifts and talents for their own benefit. And like Samson, their strength will fail them. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a huge crowd of witnesses to the life of faith, let us strip off every weight that slows us down, especially the sin that so easily trips us up. And let us run with endurance the race God has set before us. We do this by keeping our eyes on Jesus, the champion, not the champion Samson, but Jesus, the champion who initiates and perfects our faith. Because of the joy awaiting him, he endured the cross, disregarding its shame. Now he is seated in the place of honor beside God's throne. And in Hebrews, the faith chapter, the writer of faith, the writer of Hebrews talks about, what more could I say about this one and that one and Samson? In his death, when he realized it was not about him, and he turned to have faith in God for his faithfulness, for his love, for his mercy, his faith had risen. But the result was he died. But he died in faith. God bless you. I won't see you next week, but whoever is taking the next one will. I hope you have enjoyed the story of Samson. God bless.